No, the symptoms of a Buttermilk Ranch attack are you just fall asleep in your Chevy Lumina. It was surprisingly comfortable. It was like a tank. It was very heavy. I couldn't figure out why I couldn't hear anything, but my headphones were only halfway plugged in, so I plugged them in all the way, and now I can hear stuff.
You went for the full plug.
Full plug.
Yes.
That means I win like a free watermelon at the monster truck rally.
Not sure about that.
No?
No.
Can we turn the thing on?
Sure.
It's on.
Too much fanfare.
The heat and the live stream are both on.
The heat is on.
The heat is on. On the street.
Good song.
It's a fantastic song.
You know, the soundtrack is only $6.
Oh, I can't imagine why. It is kind of amazing watching this film because you see the interval of musical moments is quite closer than one might consider in a modern day action film.
You mean how they like fade down Axel's theme song and then like 20 seconds later they faded back up again?
Yeah, or they fade in some 80s pop hit and just go with that for like 3 minutes and you're like, okay, we're not just, you know, like sprinkling in a little for flavor. We're just going like full hog with it, you know?
I mean, you got to have a good song behind your montages.
Well, everybody loves a good montage. It's the 80s.
The heat is on.
It's the style of the time.
Did you ever figure out what font that is there?
No,
it's not the
no
font
idea.
That's on the poster for some reason. They went with a much more scripty font on the poster.
Okay. Yeah, I don't know what it is. It is some weird, like, Mr. Belvedere Bookerly thing that they chose for the credits, and it's fascinating to me, because I don't remember it at all. Because apparently I've mostly seen this movie via cable television.
Yeah, me too. Which that's what I was pointing out to you. Like, this is an R-rated movie. You forget how much cursing and nakedness and just, like, all the stuff that gets cut out, and it still plays on TV all the time, and it still plays, you know, pretty passably with all of those bits cut out, but, I've seen this dozens of times on television. I don't know if I've probably seen the full version once or twice, but I don't remember when.
Yeah, I couldn't tell you. And as I was watching it on Netflix, the full rated R version of it, I was just like, oh yeah, I don't remember this, and oh yeah, I guess that happened in the sequel, because it turns out that some moments from the sequel somehow blend into this in my brain, so I am not as familiar as I thought.
Which moments?
Remember when he takes over a mansion and like uses that as his residence for when he's in town? That's the sequel.
Yeah, right, he's floating in the pool and stuff.
Yeah, this one's the hotel.
So. And remember how Rosewood is like a giant gun nut, and he's got like shotguns and guns strapped all over him all the time. He's got switchblades coming out of everywhere, and Taggart's all like, "We got to have a talk, buddy. What's the deal with you?"
Yeah, and he has all those ferns and stuff in his apartment. Anyway, I like the sequel.
That's probably a direct result of this one, because in this one, at the end, they're outgunned, and he's running out of bullets. He's like, remember the end of Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid? And Taggart's just like, oh my god, please don't say that. I don't want to die here.
Yeah. Speaking of, as I was watching it, I was just like, you know what? If I were, like, casting people I know in these roles, you know, because I'm a terrible filmmaker, then what I would do is I would probably have you play Taggart, and I would have Kyle Seth Gray play Rosewood.
Then, yeah, the whole "you do that again, I'll shoot you myself" line would have happened like an hour earlier in the movie.
Yeah, exactly. I don't think you guys would have been paired very long in the force together, but basically that is what was coming across to me, was that vibe.
Wait, are you saying I look like Gerald Ford?
No, I'm just saying that you're going, you know, like, oh, you millennial, like, look, what did you do now? You know, that whole thing, shaking the fist in the air.
Wait, Kyle would play who?
Rosewood.
Right. Okay.
Rosemont. Well,
who, then who, Rosewood. Rosemont. Who plays Foley?
I have no idea. I was just casting those two.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, at least I get to live in Beverly Hills.
Yeah. I mean, I'm still the guy with the red leather jacket and pants and the black, like, V inset thing on the back. That was an interesting outfit.
Yeah. I also liked in the opening Detroit montage, there were two guys wearing identical red leather sleeveless, like, vests.
Yeah.
And they had the same haircut, if I recall, too.
Well, there's a lot of interesting hair in this movie. Especially for his friend Jenny, who seems to change her hair in every scene, even if it's the same day, which is a magnificent feat, if you really think about it, because she's going from like one blowout perm thing to another like tightly curled thing to a big feathered thing the next day. It's just a lot going on.
She runs a very important art gallery in Beverly Hills. She has to keep up with the fashion and the looks.
Yes, and she was definitely doing that.
And how about Bronson Pinchot? How fantastic is he?
Serge. Yeah.
Achwell Foley.
Oh God.
Ahmed Achwell. My favorite thing is when he has the other guy go get Jenny. How he just casually looks up and down Eddie Murphy and comes back up to him. He's just like, "Oh, it's the best. Like, who is this guy and why are you dressed like that? Look ever."
Yeah. Oh, it's man.
Pretty great.
Yeah. There are a lot of interesting moments in this. And a lot of bizarre cameos, like Damon Wayans as the Banana Man.
the Banana Man?
That's what he is credited as.
Isn't that an episode of Bionic? Sorry, Bonanza Now?
Well, it was a cartoon from Great Britain. It was a pre-Brexit cartoon. Yeah.
Mm. Mm-hmm. Brexit is the most important meal of the day.
Yes, no one's made that joke.
No. Not at least within regard to Banana Man this podcast.
No one would have made it in 1980s, so that's all that counts, because that's when this podcast is taking place.
Ah, December 1984. Mm-hmm. This was a Christmas time movie for people.
It's interesting to think of this as Christmas, because it is not. Oh, man.
I wish I would have gotten to see it in theaters, but I was 6 months old.
Yeah, and one thing I didn't realize about this is the long production cycle of it. That it went through to get made. Did you know that this started in 1977?
No, I had no idea. Explain that.
So apparently, and I'm going to directly read this to you from Wikipedia, the source of all that is true. In 1977, Paramount executive Don Simpson came up with a movie idea about a cop from East Los Angeles who transferred to Beverly Hills. Screenwriter Danilo Bach was called in to create this screenplay. Bach pitches idea to Simpson and Paramount in 1981, so 4 years later, he wrote it, under the name Beverly Drive, about a cop from Pittsburgh named Ellie Axel. However, the script was a straight action film, and Bach was forced to make changes to the script, but after a few attempts, the project went to sale. With the success of Flashdance in 1983, Simpson saw Beverly Hills as the next big project. Daniel Petrie Jr. was brought in to rewrite the script, and Paramount loved Petrie's humorous approach to the project. With the lead character now called Axel Ellie from Detroit, producer Jerry Bruckheimer claimed that the role of Axel Foley was first offered to Mickey Rourke, who signed a $400,000 holding contract to do the film. When revisions and other preparations took longer than expected, Rourke left the project after his contract expired to do another film. The script was then sent to Sylvester Stallone.
Oh, God.
Who gave the script a dramatic rewrite and made it into a straight action film. In one of the previous drafts written for Stallone, the character of Billy Rosewood was called Sidons, it's S-I-D-D-O-N-S, so I have no idea what that F that is, was killed off halfway through the script during one of the action scenes. Stallone had renamed the lead character to Axel Corbretti, with the character Michael...
Not Italian at all, is he?
Well, I mean, it would have been Stallone instead of Eddie Murphy. with the character of Michael Tandino, James Russo, being his brother, and Jenny Summers, Lisa Eilbacher, playing his love interest. Stallone said his script for Beverly Hills Cop would have, quote unquote, looked like the opening scene from Saving Private Ryan on the beaches of Normandy. Believe it or not, the finale was me in a stolen Lamborghini playing chicken with an oncoming freight train being driven by an ultra-slimy bad guy. End quote. However, Stallone's ideas were deemed too expensive for Paramount.
He shouldn't be allowed to write things. What the hell is that?
I don't know. I mean, he wrote Rocky, but it's too expensive for Paramount to produce, and Stallone ultimately pulled it out 2 weeks before filming was to start. 2 days later, the film's producers, Simpson and Bruckheimer, were able to convince Eddie Murphy to replace Stallone in the film, prompting massive rewrites. Besides Stallone and Rourke, other actors were considered for the role of Axel Foley, including Richard Pryor, Al Pacino, and James Caan.
I had no idea this movie was such a disaster.
Me neither. Isn't that amazing?
Especially for, what does it say, $14 million budget? Like, that's like barely worth the attention of most of these people.
Yeah, and a box office of $316 million.
Yeah, I think it's safe to say this movie made its money back and then some to eternity.
Yeah, especially...
This movie probably made so much, people on the back end actually saw money.
I'm sure people on every end of this saw money.
Wow, that's... I can't imagine any permutation of this movie other than the one that exists, probably because all of the rewrites and all of the character things just work so well here, and Eddie Murphy plays a great sort of straight man character through all of this nonsense.
Yeah, well, it's like cemented into your brain by this point, because we've been watching it in clips and bits and pieces played out for many years and in sequels.
Plus, it feels like a lot of this is really his... he's riffing on a lot of this stuff. It feels like a lot of it just comes from Eddie Murphy. I'd be curious to know what was in the script and what wasn't, because if a lot of the stuff wasn't in there, this movie would have been terrible without Eddie Murphy.
I have absolutely... no idea what this script looks like, and I bet it's a mess, but I'm just guessing, who knows. It's interesting, and it certainly presages a certain kind of action film that would be done over and over and over again for the next 20 years. Basically, I mean, when you think about like Bad Boys 2, also produced by Jerry Bruckheimer, and the original Bad Boys, it's like how much DNA of that comes from Beverly Hills Cop?
Probably a lot. But the one that always comes to my mind when I think of movies that ripped off Beverly Hills Cop is Cuffs. Did you ever see Cuffs?
No, I've never heard of Cuffs.
K-U-F-F-S. It's Christian Slater doing his best impersonation of Eddie Murphy from Beverly Hills Cop, also through like 80% of the movie breaking the fourth wall and talking directly to camera, and his girlfriend is Mila Jovovich.
Did you make that up? Was that an improv bit that you were doing?
Nope, that's a real thing. 1992. Should talk about it next. It's phenomenally bad.
Wait, 1982?
92.
92, okay.
But it basically looks like 1986 directly after this one.
Ugh, man.
It's pretty spectacular.
Oh, God, that's rough.
Yeah. Yeah, but he's doing an Axel Foley through the whole thing.
Well, if there's one thing I think of, it's Christian Slater and how similar he is to Eddie Murphy. But,
yeah, you know, he wore the jeans and like t-shirt and like a leather jacket and stuff, and he was a cop and ran around.
Oi.
There was antics and stuff and silliness and anyway.
Oi, Gewalt.
We'll do that one next. It'll be great.
No. But if anything, this made me want to watch the sequel again. So yeah.
Except Beverly Hills Cop 3. I'll never get that out of my mind because it's so bad. But
I haven't seen the whole thing.
Well.
Yeah.
You know the premise of it, at least.
Something about a theme park?
Yeah, basically Uncle Dave, plays a Walt Disney type character, and somebody shoots him, but he doesn't die because it's very kid friendly. But he's got to go figure out who shot Uncle Dave and why. And somebody was trying to take over his Disneyland type park or something. Or they're like, no, they're inside the park. They're counterfeiting money or something. They're hiding like their printing presses inside one of the silly rides or whatever.
Oh,
it's very stupid. Wow. So at the end, he's like riding around on some like smoky Pirates of the Caribbean style ride with his gun drawn, like looking for bad guys inside the. It's terrible.
That sounds really awful.
Yeah.
Might continue to not see that one. But you know, I mean, this was still a good movie.
Yeah.
You know, and I would consider seeing the sequel to this, but yeah, so this one has a lot of notable performances entered by certain 80s people that we are familiar with.
It's so great. It's so 80s and so great.
Yeah, like Paul Reiser is in here, Ronnie Cox is in here, and he's not a bad guy this time, which is a huge departure in the 80s for Ronnie Cox.
Mm-hmm.
And we have Eddie Murphy, of course. We have Judge Reinhold, who, besides this, is first and foremost known in my mind for his appearance as Judge Reinhold in Arrested Development, where he plays a TV studio judge. You know, you got Bronson Pinchot, who is a very strange man who has a lot of problems. But, you know, he was in Perfect Strangers, which was a big thing back then.
Mm-hmm.
Damon Wayans, of course, also big for things.
You got that guy who was in Breaking Bad and then was in Better Call Saul.
Yeah, him.
What's his name?
I don't know, but I know who you're talking about.
Jonathan Banks. There he is.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, he's in this one. He's young.
Mm-hmm.
He's still a bad guy, though.
Young, quote unquote.
Still missing most of his hair and wearing a suit.
Sorry, Jonathan Banks. this is a very interesting film. And we have many music montages, and we get two in the first 10 minutes, and we quickly establish that Eddie Murphy is a guy who doesn't play by the rules, and he's a fast-talking undercover cop.
I love that his shtick, which, again, has now been parodied into oblivion, which is why it isn't really fun anymore, but he just does not stop talking until basically everyone just sort of, like, gives him what he wants. Just like, all right, just stop talking and go away.
Yeah, I mean...
Like, he bullies his way into that bonded warehouse and just yells at people until they do what he wants. It's like, oh, that's not how that would work at all, but it's great for the movie.
Yeah, I mean, every conversation with him is a war of attrition, so it works out really well for him. And it comes across as very funny in the film because it's every conversation. So it's his thing. And he would go on to later replicate this in other roles. But in this, it works out particularly well. And he's also incredibly charming here, even though he doesn't always do things that are correct or right or things that we would do as the audience, where we'd be like, oh, no, I would call the cops and they have them come in and I wouldn't do that at all. I wouldn't walk into that warehouse. You know, that's not him. And we still like him.
He's a lone wolf, man. He's mm-hmm. going to get the job done. It's personal for him. It's a friend.
Yeah. It was Tandino, you know, the guy who we don't care about, who has a...
It's his old best friend who just got out of jail 6 months ago, and now they're hanging out together. And he's like, let's go steal a car. He's like, I can't steal a car. I'm a cop now.
Oh, man. I mean, when they meet each other, and it's the hugging and stuff, and like, oh, yeah, this and that, and remember back the when, and it's just like, oh, let's get past this and watch this guy die. Because it's so phony baloney. And I don't know if that was convincing to anyone in the 80s, but... It's not super convincing to me. It's like, this guy is not going to survive for
he's very,
many more minutes.
His character is very assassinatable. I think that's a word.
No. But
He stole German bearer bonds from his employer.
He sure did.
Are all, by the way, you mentioned on the internet, of course, that every movie in the 80s is about bearer bonds, which is true, because the only movies that are really important from this time are Die Hard and this. But why are all the bearer bonds German? What was Germany doing with all the bearer bonds?
I have no idea.
Because they were German in Die Hard, too, weren't they?
Yeah, they were. I kind of want to know what it was. And they were also German terrorists, quote-unquote, who were doing this. Even though we find out through the course of the film, spoiler alert, they're not the terrorists you think they are. They're just robbers, blah, 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 et cetera. Mm-hmm.
Although Victor Maitland's not German, is he?
No, Victor Maitland is of some background. I honestly couldn't tell you. It's interesting.
Hmm.
Yeah, he's played by Stephen Burkoff.
Yeah, apparently, according to IMDb, he was born in London.
Mm-hmm.
So that explains why he was wearing, like, a karate gi instead of a suit jacket in his office.
It was the 80s, you know?
It was the 80s. You wore a white, like, a starched white shirt. You get a really bright, one of them crazy, like, Jerry Garcia-style ties. Then you put a karate gi over it because you're big into fashion in Beverly Hills.
Yeah, well, it was about how Japanese business was going to take over from American business. It was a big thing in the 80s. Remember that?
Yeah, so I guess, you know, invest your money in German and bearer bonds so they don't depreciate or something.
Yes.
That's the way it goes.
No. Oh, man. It's so weird. It's very weird when you watch it. But that was apparently the thing behind it. And as I joked to you, it was like the Bitcoin of the 80s because it's like, oh, it's untraceable. And it's like, okay, great.
And, you know, just to make sure that the audience isn't, like, lost in some sort of, like, white-collar crime about bearer bonds, they're like, oh, he also smuggles cocaine, too. So, there's that.
Yeah.
Because of the 80s.
I feel like the bearer bonds thing is much more difficult for the audience to really understand. So, you just got to say, drugs. And then you're like, oh, okay, I understand this now. Because all of them were doing drugs because it was the 80s.
Yeah, they very quickly pivot from he's a smuggler of bearer bonds too. Oh, he smuggles all sorts of things, including cocaine.
Yes.
Because coffee grounds.
Coffee grounds.
Coffee grounds were very big in the 80s as well.
Yeah.
You pour hot water through it and drink it.
Yes. I wonder what his air press method was. It didn't exist at the time. That would be an anachronism.
He strikes me as more of a Chemex kind of guy too.
No. I think he's just a Mr. Coffee, but he just has his assistant do it for him in the back room where no one can see it's Mr. Coffee, and then they just see the assistant bring it up.
Well, I mean, he does have Serge working for him, and he makes very good espresso with a lemon twist.
Mm.
Lemon twist?
Mm-hmm.
That's not too much trouble. No, don't be stupid. It's so great. Anyway, right, so his pal got out of jail, was working in Beverly Hills for 6 months with Jenny, came to visit Axel Foley, brought his German bearer bonds with him because, I don't know what, he was going to like run away or whatever and live off his stolen money. And then he gets whacked by Victor Maitland's goons.
The part I couldn't quite ever figure out is how the goons knew to find him at Axel's place. Without knowing who Axel was later on or before that, because it seems like that would be something that would have crossed their minds, I guess, at some point. But
maybe his car was parked outside. They took Axel's car.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Yeah, it's weird because they show up to a cop's house, so they must know that he knows the cop. But
I don't think they knew he was a cop because he's a different kind of cop. He lives in a trashy apartment.
Yeah, but he knew where he was staying, which was at his friend's place.
But he didn't have like an iPhone or whatever to whip it out and like Google who lives at this place.
Yeah, I know, but like, how did he know to go there?
Well, that's what I said. What's his name's car was parked outside.
Okay.
They probably put out an APB with the local folks saying we're looking for this car, and then they're like, yeah, the car's parked right outside here. And they're like, all right, we'll go inside.
All right. Well, fine.
I have no idea. But they track him down because they're crafty. They're bad guys.
Yeah, and so Eddie Murphy gets knocked out, and then
could slap him around and be like, why'd you steal from us? He's like, I was just going to give it back. He's like, don't ever show out your face in Beverly Hills again. And then he knocks him down and shoots him in the back of the head twice.
Yeah. It makes it really hard to show your face in Beverly Hills again.
unless you had like a Ziploc bag or something. Sorry, Mikey.
Oh, Dan, have some respect for the fictionally dead. but the thing with the shooting is also the sound work in this is not great, because it really does just sound like the blanks they used on set there. Because you just hear like this little tiny pop, pop, and it's like, okay, guys, that was kind of weak.
Well, but they were down the hall. It was a long shot. You shouldn't sound like you're right up close to it.
Yeah, all right. But they, so they have that, and then they have the scene with the cop boss, Inspector Todd, who's all like angry still from the earlier scene.
You're on thin
scene.
Ice from that scene that we didn't talk about earlier, where you were haggling with some guys trying to sell cigarettes to illegal guys who, because apparently selling stolen cigarettes in like 18-wheeler trucks is a thing that happened back then. Oh, he stole them, and then he rampaged through the city, smashing cars and cop cars and stuff. And comedy.
Yeah.
Stay away from this case. I'm giving it to these other guys.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to totally inconspicuously take my vacation now. and totally not have anything to do with this. It's like, you better do it. Otherwise, it'll be the longest vacation of your life.
Because he's assigning this case to a guy who hasn't had a case in 12 years.
Yes.
Which sounds like a great idea.
No, all of this sounds really bad. But
Inspector Todd yells really loudly, so you don't question it.
Well,
you're friends with a criminal. What's the deal here?
I mean, Eddie Murphy questioned it.
Yeah, well, I'm just saying, like,
I mean, Eddie Murphy's not nobody, Dan. He's Eddie Murphy.
Back then, he wasn't.
He
Eddie
was.
Murphy that
he's,
we know now.
He's got the Eddie Murphy Productions credit in the opening.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, when they call you with like 2 days' notice before they're going to start rolling cameras, you could probably negotiate just about anything you want.
Yeah. Well,
I bet they even let him keep that car.
Sure.
A beat up blue Chevy Nova.
Uh-huh. And
he got to stay in the Beverly Palms Hotel or whatever. Is that a real hotel?
No, that's not. And the location is actually the Biltmore Hotel in downtown Los Angeles. It looks very similar to the Beverly Wilshire Hotel on Wilshire in Beverly Hills, but it is not. It is downtown. And it is the Biltmore.
We have a Biltmore here, too.
Ah, yes. I've been in that one.
Yeah.
It's Frank Lloyd Wright.
It is?
Yes, Dan. Hmm. Know your history.
It's fine.
Oh, Dan.
They have overpriced cocktails. That's all I know.
Why would you drink there?
My family lives... Well, part of my family lives very near to it.
Oh, so then you're like, oh, I can't take any more of my family. Better go to the nearest hotel.
No, they like to eat at the hotel.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Did you not eat?
No, I did. It's fine.
Oh.
They're like tacos and burgers and like 18 different salads, but the rest of the food's not very good.
Oh, I'm so sorry. Anyway. You poor thing. You didn't have a bay shrimp sandwich and a, you know, the poached salmon?
No, it sounded pretty good, though. I had a good shrimp sandwich in San Francisco not too long ago, though.
Yeah, no.
To San Francisco or the sandwich?
Both.
Anyway, he does his Axel Foley thing when he goes in, because he hears the lady on the phone going like, I'm sorry, we're just so full because we're a very popular, very fancy hotel. So he's like, hi, I totally have a reservation here. And then yells about being denied his reservation because he's black for a while, and then keeps yelling and yelling until they're like, fine, we have a room for you. You can have it.
Yes.
And it's humorous because he pretends to be from Rolling Stone and he's going to interview Michael Jackson.
Yeah. Very, very dated, this argument. Certainly could do it verbatim these days, but yeah.
I mean, it works. He gets his room. He gets a suite for the price of a regular room, which is still...
Yeah.
Wait, what was $235 a night in 1984?
I don't know. Transfer it to German bearer bonds to let me know how much that is.
I mean, he would just, you know, slide one of those out of the package, and then... weren't they like $10,000 each? He would cover himself easy.
Sure.
He can open a tab and have as many shrimp sandwiches as he wants.
Well, fortunately, he doesn't have to worry about it. Spoiler alert. But the...
I wonder what his plan was at the end there. Was he was actually going to pay for it?
No. I have no idea what his plan was. I think his plan was to just bullshit his way out of that situation.
Say, charge it to Rolling Stone.
Mm-hmm.
Rolling Stone probably had some sort of an account with them for all of their out-of-towners, so yeah, it might have worked.
Yeah, I mean, it was a fictional hotel, so can't really, like, nitpick it. But he gets his room, and he goes to meet up with Jenny, who's in the art gallery, and he meets Serge. And they chit-chat for a bit, and it's very notable, and it's one of the scenes that many people remember from this film, because Serge is not really in the rest of the film. It was just this one spot. But he really sticks out in your mind because he was such a masterful performer. And after that, he talks to Jenny, and it's like, oh, you know, Michael died, and oh, that's so sad and stuff, and we're going to act like we have chemistry, but we really don't have any on-screen chemistry at all. And then...
they haven't seen each other in years. What do you expect?
I have some questions about their interactions. It's very strange, but it feels so phony baloney. But they have the whole thing about Victor Maitland's really the boss and blah 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 blah.
And hey, Waller in the chat room actually looked it up. $235 in 1985 is around $400 today.
Oh my God,
$400 a night for a hotel in Beverly Hills. Jeez,
that's actually a deal.
Yeah, kind of. I mean, it depends on which part you're in. When they were doing the montage going down Rodeo and all of the fun shops, did you look at it and be like, oh, there's all my favorite places to shop?
No, they've redone the building facades of every single one of the shops.
Well, of course you know that. You hang out down there a lot there still, though, don't you?
It's like, not to triangulate, but the golden triangle, as it is referred to, is just a short distance for me.
You walk your large fluffy poodle down there?
I don't. Unless that's a euphemism for something, but I don't know what that would be.
It's a euphemism for your bacon avocado sandwiches or something.
That's weird.
We haven't talked about those in a while. You still eating the bacon avocado sandwiches?
No, it's kind of a pain in the butt to go over there. And by the way, Rye moved over somewhere near that area.
Oh, so you don't want to accidentally run into
it? No, God, that'd be the worst. but the thing I was going to say to you about sandwiches, though, is that... somebody here had sent me a little message about constructing a sandwich,
mm-hmm.
and was going through a Safeway, I think?
Yeah, it was a Safeway.
Okay. The Safeway near your house to pick out all of the things you could use to make something that was like a Cuban sandwich from your home for the next day.
Yeah, I mean, you posted the picture or whatever. You hashtag send Dan your Cuban sandwich or whatever, and it was in my mind for a while, and then... you know, we didn't have any food in the house, so we were going to pick up some stuff to make some dinner, and it was like, hey, let's make some Cuban sandwiches or whatever. We got a panini press when we got married. We still haven't used it. Let's try it out. Wow. So we did. We got some stuff.
It's amazing.
It was delicious.
Uh-huh. I mean, it all worked out okay for you then.
Well, yeah, I'm more than okay. I mean, it was
okay.
Even if it wasn't a true Cuban sandwich, it was delicious.
No,
and flat.
Crispy. I just want to make sure because I wasn't sure if you're going to be like, oh, it just tasted like a pork sandwich, you know?
No, we didn't. Like you said, we didn't overdo it on the pork or the salami. It was mostly the ham there too.
It's about the balance, right?
Yeah, it's about the balance. It was good. It was a good meaty sandwich with the mustard and the mayo and the pickle. It's good. It was enjoyable.
That's
now, we had chips with ours. What did you have with yours?
I had plantain chips.
See, we didn't have... I don't think they have plantains in the Safeway.
Well,
also, we don't have a deep fryer.
Some places have banana chips, which are not the same, because they're like dehydrated banana discs that are like as hard as croutons or something. It's not the same thing at all. But the plantain chips that you can find in Florida... like Schiffles, or I don't know how you pronounce that at all, but green and white bag with red letters, and inside are these little golden discs, and they are thin and crispy and super salty. You would not believe the amount of salt they cram on those things, but it is delicious with your sandwich.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We went with the salt and vinegar chips, which I guess is also salty, so yeah, not too far off.
It's in the name. So it's fine.
No, they were Poor Brothers. They have Poor Brothers out there with you? I didn't realize Poor Brothers was an Arizona brand, which apparently it is.
Poor? Like P-O-O-R?
E. P-O-O-R-E. I think it's a last name.
Oh, poor? Like, oh God, my pores are so big?
O-O-R-E.
Oh. So it's not even a word.
No, it's a name.
Okay.
Anyway, they're good. They make chips. They're good.
All right. Well, those poor guys, their name. But the
they don't sell any Cuban sandwiches on Rodeo Drive, do they?
No, they don't. Thank God.
Just Cubanos?
No, not even that. But I mean, we've been over this before. When there are restaurants out here on the West Coast that purport to make a Cuban sandwich or a Cubano, they usually just make a ciabatta sandwich that has some slices of ham and some thin slices of pork tenderloin, which is not the same as roast pork in any way, and then they just put a pickle on it and some Dijon mustard and call it a day. And it's like, you guys didn't do it. You didn't fulfill any of these requirements correctly.
Well, you'll be happy to know that the pork that I selected that we were a little concerned about, it was a little bit smoky. It was nice, but it wasn't very barbecuing.
Okay, that's good.
That's good.
Yeah, because I mean, Cuban roast pork, you know, it's like a whole thing. It's not barbecue, so you know, it's hard to reproduce over here without like roasting a pork. So
basically, don't even try. Don't even try unless you're in Florida.
Well, you can try. You can try.
Oh my God! Why are the plantain chips on eBay? AF Waller in the chat room again has sent us an eBay link to a bag of original plantain chips.
Oh,
$11.
Yeah, no, you can also get them on Amazon, but they're incredibly expensive too. I think they're probably $11. Well.
Are these like antique chips? What is the deal here? These were bagged once in 1973.
They're
selling for $11.
They're signed by Mr. Chiffles. no idea. No, but Amazon apparently has them for distribution as well. But they're prohibitively expensive considering that they're plantain chips.
Can't get them on a Prime now?
No. They don't carry them in the warehouse.
That is unacceptable.
Sorry about that.
I'm checking my app. I don't care what you say.
Are you checking your disappointment?
Frequently.
Still there.
C-H-I-F-L-E-S. The result it came back with is Ortega fire roasted diced green chilies. I don't think that's the same thing.
No.
Those are mild. And Las Palmas green chili enchilada sauce.
It's not it either.
Oh, it thinks I meant chilies, that's why.
Oh.
No, that's not what I meant.
No. Sorry, but I mean, Las Palmas green enchilada sauce is actually not that bad.
I mean,
if you're lazy, and I've been lazy on occasion.
I mean, as long as you have the enchiladas to put them on.
Well, I mean, I made those.
Doesn't make a great snack by itself.
No. It's a terrible soup. But yeah, they're incredibly expensive to order. I probably should have just like checked a bag, like a suitcase with them and brought them back. Oh man, I should have brought you back a moon pie.
No, well, that's fine. I've had moon pies and when I was in Tennessee, there were moon pies galore and I didn't buy them either.
Well, I know you didn't buy them. I was going to make you have one because I was going to guilt you into eating it because I brought it back for you. You don't understand the master plan, which is just to guilt Dan into eating terrible things. Because the
trick me into eating a moon pie. Mail me a moon pie. It doesn't matter where it's from. I'll eat it. It's fine.
Yeah, it has to be a banana moon pie, though. Listeners.
They're not good.
Listeners of the South. We need to send Dan banana moon pies because they taste like chemicals, Dan. They don't.
I know what they taste like. I told you. I've had a lot of them.
You haven't had a banana moon pie, though.
I have had a banana moon pie.
When?
On the thing. Remember the movie?
I have no idea what you're talking about.
I worked on a movie called Moon Pie. It was called Moon Pie because they were the only people who would sponsor the movie and provide a signature snack type thing to be featured in the movie. And there were boxes of leftover moon pies after the movie wrapped. And I took one home and I ate it. Well, I ate most of it. You can't eat the whole box because it was like 30 banana moon pies, and they were terrible.
Oh my God. Why have you never told me this before?
I told you that. We talked about it in the Slack. I don't know. Maybe you weren't there or whatever. But yes.
No, what do you mean maybe I wasn't there? I was pestering you about banana moon pies the whole entire time you were in Tennessee.
I know. And I swear I brought this. Anyway, I worked on a movie called Moon Pie. It was like the first thing I worked on. I was the extras coordinator. I basically babysat eight-year-olds in a room all day. It was miserable. Hello, everyone that worked on that movie with me.
How old are they now?
I don't know. Let's see when the movie was made. Moon Pie. It had, what's his name in it? Michael McDonald and Stephanie Weir from Mad TV in it.
Oh my God.
2006 was the movie. Never released because it was bad. It was a comedy. It was originally titled The Principal and the Third Grade Teacher, so you can kind of get the gist of what it's about. Yeah. Apparently, when they cut it together, it just wasn't funny. is what I heard, so it didn't get released.
Wow.
Although it has 7.6 stars on IMDb, so somebody must have a copy somewhere. I still want to see it.
Wow.
Anyway, there were lots of moon pies. They had a vending machine that they stocked full of them for the set.
Really?
Yeah.
Where was it filmed?
What's it called? What's the name of the city in the middle of the desert in Arizona? It's on your way to Globe. Superior, Arizona. It's a little mining town. It's also where they shot that David Arquette movie, Eight-Legged Freaks.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. So the city is like a mining town. There's mines everywhere and mostly shut down. They have a school and some houses. That's about it. It's about an hour and a half away. And, yeah.
Wow.
Moon Pie, 2006, directed by Drake Doremus. I think he's actually gone on to do a fair amount of things.
Was he nice?
Oh, yeah, he was great. I like Drake.
Okay. Well, I mean, everybody likes Drake.
I mean, the boom operator guy who yelled at me for, like, grazing his boom pole was not super pleasant.
Oh, well, don't graze another man's boom pole, Dan.
He was like, he was holding it sideways, like preventing me from walking down the hallway and doing my job. So I kind of gently tried to push it out of the way, and he screamed at me for touching his gear.
Don't touch another man's gear, Dan.
Yeah. Yeah, it was great.
He
chastised me. You wouldn't go touch the camera, would you? I'm like, well, not right now because I'm not operating a camera, but I could because I know how to run a camera. But anyway, I need to go over there and do my job now. So thank you.
Wow.
I wonder if that guy's name here is here in the cast list or the crew list. We were talking about a movie at some point.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Beverly Hills Cop. So less moon pie is probably a boom operator. Maybe less surly. And so they have the thing where she's gonna go with him, and then they get tailed and stuff, and then they do the things, but not before. Oh wait. I skipped over the part where he gets thrown out of the window because he walks into the office, and then he gets arrested by the two guys who are male models who don't know how to arrest anyone. did you notice that? It was just like the one guy who's supposed to be like cuffing him and pushing him into the police car is like basically not touching him at all. Is like barely putting his hand on the back of his head. It was just like, guy, come on.
Yeah. You know, a lot of these cops came from the 1980s school of police action, whereby once you draw your weapon and point it at the person, like, job done, like, they're expecting the camera to cut away, even though it doesn't. It's like, no, you have to go handcuff him and arrest him. They're not just going to cut away when you point guns at him and let the audience interpret that means that you arrested him.
So such bad actors. And so they arrest him, take him to the police station. This is where we meet Taggart and Rosewood. And they have the little back and forth about his behavior, and Axel doesn't want to play along, and is giving him some lip. And then eventually, Taggart strikes Axel, and this brings out the lieutenant. Now, Lieutenant Ronnie Cox is none too pleased, and asks if Axel would like to file charges against Taggart. And Axel declines and says, you know, where he's from, you know, a cop doesn't file charges against another cop. And so it's like, okay, well, whatever. And it's, you get the sense that Beverly Hills is very by the book, and that it, none of that stuff goes on here, or whatever, what have you. And this is a key.
Beverly Hills is a different kind of place, man.
I mean, I live here, and I have interacted with the Beverly Hills PD on one occasion where my car was broken into. But other than that, no occasions have I interacted with them.
How did they treat you?
Fine.
Were they wearing suits?
It was just, you know, the cops, the stuff, and they called the CSI team, who was one person with like a kit and caboodle that had like some powder and a brush, and they did that for fingerprints, which were useless because there weren't any. So that was just for show.
Well, at least they brought them out. I mean, that's tax dollars to spend.
I think they do that mainly to satisfy people who are like, we've seen CSI on TV and Law and Order, and we expect you to have this and to solve our case immediately using forensics. And they're like, that's not really how it works, guys. But
that's usually what they just say here. Like, no, that's not. No.
No,
we'll call you. Bye.
They just bring out somebody to do this. That way the old people don't yell at them. And so that was the extent of that interaction. But so Axel leaves the police station. He's tailed by the cops. And he was bailed out by Jenny. And they go back to his place at the hotel. And he decides he's going to subvert the cops who are monitoring him by ordering them room service. And it's a quite hilarious scene where he calls down for a late supper for the beige car out front. But
of course, they have a specific late supper menu in Beverly Hills.
Oh, of course. At the Beverly Hills Palm Hotel. Who wouldn't? But they take down the food, and while that's happening, he goes down there, goes to the dessert station or whatever with the bananas, gets the bananas from Damon Wayans, who is playing a very effete banana operator, and he takes the bananas and shoves them in the tailpipe, as one does with bananas, and then he hops in the car, and they go after him, and then the car stalls out, and LOL, isn't that funny? And he goes to the warehouse, and they see the stuff happened with the bearer bonds, where the extras turn the bearer bonds directly to camera to make sure that the camera can see that they're bearer bonds. I swear to God, that was the direction that the extras were given, because it's just like they literally just like turn it towards the camera and then stop moving for 10 seconds.
They're also having a really weird conversation. I couldn't even really follow what the hell he was talking about, but he's talking about meeting somebody at a bar or something.
Yeah, I think they just wanted to give them something to do, but it doesn't have anything to do with the story.
Yeah, the one guy says a bunch of nonsense, and the other guy just like says, like, get off my back or shut up, and then they like carry the box back out. It's like, what? Did somebody actually write that dialogue?
Yeah, it doesn't matter. And so they get all that stuff with the coffee grounds that he takes, and...
Well, it's Crate Opener 1 and Crate Opener 2. Those are their character names.
Oh.
It's nice.
Well, at least they got a backstory or something. But he goes back to the hotel and hops in the police car with the guys. And isn't that funny?
Yeah, because they got chastised by their boss saying, you know, get back out there and find him. And don't even bother coming back if you don't know where he is or whatever.
Yeah. Yep, yep. And then he talks them into going to a strip club, which in reality is not a strip club. It's just some bar in Sunset that they found for the purposes of filming this movie. But they
always thought that song that they were playing in there was interesting or weird or whatever. But it was never on the soundtrack. And I actually like tracked it down because I wasn't listening to music back then. I had no idea where it came from. But it took a really long time to try and find it. It was Vanity Six is the band. I think that was one of Prince's little understudy groups. Are you familiar?
No.
Anyway, I think she was a singer that like he was trying to groom to be in a band or something, and she died. It was like a three-person girl group or whatever. Anyway, that's the song that's playing in the club there that they're dancing to.
Yeah.
It's a weird song.
Axel sees that there are two guys casing the joint, and they're not dressed for the weather of the region.
Big black trench coats.
Yeah.
Standing in the corner, completely not suspiciously.
It's not very L.A., let's just say that. And so he comes up with the plan of how he'll get this one guy over here, and Taggart will get this other guy over there, and Rosewood will just stay seated. And they bust up the whole thing, and then he has this big lie that he tells to Bogomil. And Ronnie Cox doesn't believe it for a minute, and asks Taggart if it was really what happened. And Taggart says, no, it's not really what happened, and Axel did everything, and he really saved all this stuff. So this sets up a very important moment for the end of the film about lying, where lying is sometimes an amazing thing you can do for friends.
Especially if you're a police officer.
Yes. Well, I mean, if anything you can really take away from this film is that you should always lie and steal and cheat and not do anything by the book, and nothing bad will ever happen to you.
Well, what the moral is here is that the ends justify the means, of course.
Yes. Yes. So, they go through that process, and then Axel is going to go back to his hotel, and he is reassigned the two other bozos, and they're like, we're not going to be fooled by this with the donuts and the coffee, and they follow him, and they go to Maitland's place, and
we're not going to be fooled by a banana in the tailpipe.
Yeah, and they do the mocking voice thing, and then
it's very Eddie Murphy.
It's very, very Eddie Murphy, and then they do the picnicking. Which lasts for 2 seconds because Maitland's car leaves, and then he goes and chases after them. And he sees where Maitland goes. And the other cops pursuing him try to chase after the car, but are stopped by the changing of the light. So,
yeah, he tricks them by like waiting till the light turns red and then running through it because he can do it, but they can't. So, yeah. Mm-hmm. Those cops were easier to lose than a banana in the tailpipe.
Yeah. I mean, there aren't too many things that are easier than a banana in the tailpipe.
I think they did that on Mythbusters. I'm pretty sure it didn't work.
Oh.
They just came firing out, just bananas shooting out of the tailpipe.
Oh, despite the fruits of their labor?
Well, eventually, they applied some more fruits and labor and found a way to clog it and actually, replicate it.
Oh, okay.
That's what they do.
Well, with some tailpipes, you need a lot of fruit and labor. But the thing here, when they go and
I'm just
find...
shaking my head right now, by the way. I know you can't hear, but I'm just shaking my head.
Okay. Well, just shake it closer to the microphone. So he goes to...
Is this better?
Yeah. So he goes to the club, and he tries to get in by pulling off this... very uncomfortable to watch thing of trying to pretend as if he were the homosexual lover of Maitland. And this is uncomfortable to watch because mostly he says that, oh, we'll tell him that he has this disease from having sex with me from Ramon. And it's just like, oh my God.
Well, when you say it, it's not funny at all.
No, it isn't funny. As a gay person, I'm a little sensitive to this sort of stuff, but it is not really, God. I mean, it was the 80s, people dying from AIDS, and then you're just like, oh yeah, it was just this funny joke about stuff falling off of his body from having sex with another man. Anyway, he goes and he breaks up the breakfast buffet, and this makes everybody upset, because the one guy gets whipped cream all over his face, and
yeah. Well, Jonathan Banks' stunt double gets whipped cream on his face, and then they paint some whipped cream on his actual face.
Yeah,
he's got a great like angry stare in that scene too.
He has like dead eyes. They're grumpy eyes. they trade barbs in a scene that seems to have no purpose because I don't know why Axel felt compelled to do this in the story, because it just gets him sent to the station because he's arrested again. And
well, he has the info about the coffee ground, so he wants to because he broke into the thing, so he wants to prod him a little bit and try and get under his skin and tell him, I know what you're up to and I'm gonna get you. And I'm not entirely sure what his end game was there, but maybe he thought he would slip or something, or maybe he thought he would provoke him into going to the warehouse to like check on his stuff or something. But yeah, he really just gets arrested again.
Yeah, because he doesn't want Bogomil, who he explains all of this to. Because Bogomil is like, okay, well, just to explain what it is. You know, he's not immediately shutting down Axel. He gets the opportunity to say all of this, and he's just like, no, you can't go after him. You can't do any of this stuff, because then he'll just withdraw all of this and go somewhere else. So that raises the question of why he bothered to confront him, because then he just knows all the same sort of stuff. But
he does things his own way. He's a rebel. He does it on his own terms.
This introduces the police chief, who comes in. He's very upset that the breakfast buffet at the club was disrupted, because obviously he is a patron of the club. And he goes in and...
How many breakfast clubs are you a member of in Beverly Hills?
Zero.
Hmm. Is it a country club or just a breakfast club? Do they have this? They have both?
Well, this wasn't really a real club, but I don't know, maybe.
Do they have clubs that you can join just to eat breakfast at?
I don't think I make enough money to know the answer to that question.
Hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, you know, you're an observer of people around you. I figured you might see some people on their way to breakfast club.
No,
brunch club.
I see people on the way to coffee shops and to the Nosh and Nate and Al's, but that's different.
I don't know what those are.
Do you like bagels, Dan?
Are we talking about real bagels or California pretend bagels?
They're New York style bagels made in California.
Okay, then yes, I am a fan of those.
Yes. So they have that.
Oh, good.
Mm-hmm. But that's not a club.
Beverly Hills, they have everything. So they don't have a club. Do they have a punch card at least, maybe?
Well, you can order a club, but it has chicken.
Oh, I like a chicken club. Does that have bacon, too?
It's too much food, because I find I can't eat a whole chicken club. I feel disgustingly overstuffed by the end.
Well, they're small, but they're stacked high. That's why, and they cut them into fours, so you can usually take two or one of them home.
I don't want to take home part of the sandwich.
Hmm.
Yeah.
See, the problem I find with the chicken club is when they stack it high, usually with the three pieces of bread or whatever, and they also toast the bread.
Yes.
You're taking a very large bite, and it usually like scratches the bejesus out of the part of your gums underneath your tongue.
Yeah, no, and the roof of your mouth. And the problem with that toast, too, is it does not keep, because it will just start absorbing the moisture from the lettuce and the tomato and the chicken and whatever and what have you. Mm-hmm. And then you got to pick that stuff off anyways, and then you just have some sort of a chicken salad at the end of it.
I mean, there are worse things to have at the end of it than a chicken salad, but...
Yeah, well, it's not like chicken salad. It is a salad that has chicken.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Also, it's not great if you're trying to, you know, watch your carb intake, because there's three slices of bread. It's like a Big Mac, but...
Yeah.
For boring white people.
Mm-hmm. Because the Big Mac is for people who want to have fun.
I like to have fun.
Uh-huh. So they...
When's the last time you had a Big Mac?
I couldn't
even
tell
know,
you.
Do you? You don't
no.
even know.
No, I couldn't even guess.
Last year?
Definitely not.
Hmm.
I never liked them.
What do you mean? Is there something you would prefer to eat at McDonald's?
Well, no. But the only things that I really eat at McDonald's, like within the last couple years, are the breakfast sandwiches. And I think I've had a chicken
like an
sandwich,
egg McMuffin or a sausage McMuffin or something.
I usually go for the bacon, egg, and cheese biscuit.
Oh, see, I don't think ours has the biscuits.
Well, yours doesn't have the biscuits by the time you're awake.
No. Well, I don't think it. I don't think ours carries the biscuit. Did they replace all of the bagels with biscuits? Because
no,
ours did the bagels.
I don't know anything about any bagels. I just remember they're out here. We have the muffins, and we have the McGriddles, and we have the biscuits.
See, ours. I think this is a regional thing, because there's places that have the muffin, the biscuit, and the McGriddle, and then there are places that have muffin, bagel, McGriddle, and I think we are one of those.
Oh, that's sad, because I can't imagine those bagels are any good. But
they're unusually soft, considering that they're probably not that fresh.
Yeah, well, I think it's just the same batter they use for everything. They just shaped it different. But the thing is that the when they added the later in the day all day breakfast stuff,
mm-hmm.
they don't have the biscuits on the all-day thing. They only have the English muffins.
Didn't they recently add the McGriddles to the all-day? I think it was within the last month or two.
I don't know, but I don't order those. Those are terrible for you.
No, I only eat the Egg McMuffin, the standard 1970, 1960, whenever they invented the breakfast at McDonald's version of the breakfast. Orange juice, hash brown, Egg McMuffin.
Okay.
It's delicious.
Sometimes I like the egg white delight thing, the McDelight, whatever the F that's called.
Here we go, Beverly Hills. Mm-hmm. No, yeah. Okay, so non-breakfast items at McDonald's that are better than the Big Mac.
I mean, I don't know better, but I mean, I just
generally you would prefer.
I don't like their burger patties.
Okay, well, let's assume that you are locked in a McDonald's because it is a zombie apocalypse, and it's still running for some reason, but you can't go outside, and they'll make you any sort of lunch item you want, because breakfast is over, whatever. They ran out of breakfast. All the zombies ate the breakfast. What are you going to order?
It's a really complicated scenario.
Just answer the question. Defend your position.
Well, I would probably get one of the chicken sandwiches, to be perfectly honest.
Grilled or fried? Well, no, it's not really fried. Breaded.
Breaded, yeah. I would probably go for breaded.
Is that a question?
I mean, when they grill it, it's not really grilled, so it's just sort of like, I don't know how to explain it.
They painted the char marks on there?
It's like it's
boiled it.
It's like it's like poached with char marks painted on. Like, yeah. I don't know. It's just like had it grilled in a factory and then frozen, and then it arrived at the store, and then they microwaved it for a bit in a reheating tray. I couldn't explain it. But it doesn't appeal to me as much.
Yeah. See, I know you don't eat a lot of fast food, so I'm going to give you some quick tips here. Chicken sandwiches, don't buy them anywhere other than Wendy's. When you're at McDonald's, you either eat a Big Mac or you get just regular cheeseburgers and then get like some sweet and sour sauce to dunk them in, which is really good.
What?
Yep.
No.
Or you can put your fries in the sweet and sour sauce too. That's also really good.
Well, that's fine, but that's only if you're getting chicken nuggets.
Well, no, fries with any meal can go in sweet and sour sauce.
But you should not get sweet and sour sauce with any other meal.
What do you need? What are you going to do? Get ketchup? What do you need ketchup for? There's already ketchup on the thing.
On the what thing? On the Big Mac?
On the cheeseburger. No, there's not. There, no, well, the Big Mac has its own special sauce, so you don't need to add any additional sauce to that.
Dan.
And then Jack in the Box is where you go when you want a really, really large hamburger and you want to hate yourself afterward. And grease, of course.
I mean, Jack in the Box is just where you go when you want to hate yourself afterwards. Like, you can just shorten that sentence. Yeah. But I've had their breakfast burritos that they added a couple years ago. Remember that? I tried
Jack
one
in the
of
Box?
Those. What?
Jack in the Box?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, they added breakfast burritos to that, and one of them was a sausage and cheese thing, and I ate it, and I felt terrible afterwards. Just so awful, and I couldn't understand why, and then I looked it up later, and it has 1,200 calories. So it's just, like, all saturated fat, I'm sure.
Have you ever had their insanely disgusting-looking tacos?
No, because you know what they look like? Insanely disgusting. Even the even in the promotional photos.
So here's the thing about Jack in the Box tacos. They were a big staple for drunk high school versions of me and my friends. But they are, like, if you were to shred beef to the point where it looked like Purina cat chow, and then stuff it in there with, like, some stale lettuce, and then you fry it, but, like, it's so greasy that the center part where the meat is squishy, and then the only thing that's fried and crispy is the very outer edge of the shell, and then you very gently peel that back, because since it's very greasy, it will tear, and you pour in some of the Jack in the Box homemade hot sauce, whatever, in their packets there, and you eat two of those, it's wonderful in the middle of the night when you are a drunk teenager. Nowadays, I would probably immediately go into cardiac arrest, but, yeah.
Gross.
You could get like two of them for like $1.50. It was great.
Gross. The only place I can think of that's worse is Del Taco.
No, Del Taco is phenomenal. Okay, so here's what you do at Del Taco.
Not eat there?
No, Del Taco is great. There's that one over there on Lincoln that I used to go to when I visited my cousin. The chicken soft tacos are great. if you want to eat a lot of a thing. If you only want like two tacos and you want to be full, you get the big fat chicken soft tacos, which are good. And there's also the, what is it, spicy cheddar, chicken spicy jack quesadilla or whatever, which is really good. But again, that in combination with like two tacos to fill you up. They also have the small bean and cheese burritos with red sauce, which are good, like as like an accompaniment. Or if you're drunk, you just get like five of everything and then pour hot sauce all over it. The Del Scorcho is good. The Inferno, I think, is the one that has a slightly weirder taste. No, that's Taco Bell. So the Inferno is actually spicy, but good too.
Which one's the one that has the crinkle fries inside of the burrito?
I have no idea, but you don't order that because no. That's just for marketing people.
The crinkle fries are disgusting.
No. You take that back. Crinkle fries are great, but you don't put them in a burrito.
They're never crinkly when... they're just mushy. They just have, like, a beige crinkle coating.
Well, but, like, some of them are mushy and some of them are crispy, and when you eat a mushy one, it makes the crispy ones taste all the more crispy. It's contrast.
Yeah, you can't have the dark without the light. So... Anyway, AF Waller in the chat room is again providing a service to us where he has linked to Jack's Munchie Meal, which is $6, and you get two tacos, a whole thing of fried potatoes, and plus one of these, a stacked grilled cheeseburger, an exploding cheesy chicken, literally says exploding cheesy chicken, loaded nuggets, which sounds like a euphemism for having to go to the bathroom, and then the brunch burger.
So from my recollection, there are two sizes of tacos, by the way. You can get like single tacos, and they're slightly smaller than the two taco meal. So you got to go for the two taco meal at Jack in the Box to get the full thing. But other things that you get at Jack in the Box, the sourdough Jack, which has been there for years, which is good. Pretty run-of-the-mill, like, you know, it's not real sourdough, it's just weird bread.
Sourdough is terrible anyways.
There's the ultimate, how dare you, there's the ultimate cheeseburger, which is I can still remember from the ad campaign, meat cheese, that's all that's on it. It's great. That is the one that will give you a heart attack halfway through it. You want to know, good lord, this probably explains how I got to where I was, but the college I went to, ASU, currently called Polytechnic, it was just the East Campus. It's way out next to an airport in the middle of the desert. There's nothing there.
Where the streets have no name?
Well, it's where Chandler Boulevard turns into Williams Gateway Road or whatever.
Well, that's not as catchy.
No, not quite. There was a Jack in the Box there, and I used to have like a 3-hour break between some of my classes, actually, because I was going from ASU to Scottsdale. I was going to two schools at once. Anyway, I would go to the Jack in the Box, get a ultimate cheeseburger with curly fries and ranch sauce, and you dip the ultimate cheeseburger in the ranch and eat it, which is gigantic and will fill you up. And then you get another ranch for your curly fries and dip them in and eat that. And then since I had like an hour and a half to spare after that, I would eat all this in my car, by the way, because I don't want to go inside because that's embarrassing. And then I would, in the parking lot of the Jack in the Box, I would recline the seat of my car and take about a 20-minute nap and then go back to school.
Oh, my God, Dan.
And I think I usually got like a Dr. Pepper with it or something. But sometimes you get like a milkshake or something, too.
No.
That was probably like 4,000 calories.
Jesus Christ.
See, this was the college version of me that could eat that kind of stuff.
No, gross. I mean, even back in the day when I could like eat things that were not good for me, I would never dip anything in ranch. It is disgusting.
No, ranch is wonderful. It's no. Great for pizza. It's great for hamburgers.
Barbecue sauce, Dan. Barbecue sauce.
No. Barbecue sauce is for heathens.
What? Don't you go bringing your ranch piousness in here to assault my the purity of my barbecue sauce.
What kind of barbecue sauce are you going to get at a hamburger restaurant? It's going to be terrible, like Kraft barbecue sauce.
It's just sugar, and it has some spice in it.
Jack in the Box's buttermilk ranch dipping sauce is phenomenal.
It has cilantro in it. It has shelf stable dairy. Like I don't need that, Dan. Are you gonna make an argument for shelf stable dairy?
No, I'm not.
Okay, there you go.
I actually appreciate cheese. I do.
Mm-hmm. Well, everybody appreciates cheese.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. We can all agree on cheese.
This one time back in high school, some guy owed me like $20 or something because I lent him some money. And instead of paying me back, like, we were drunk one night, we went to Del Taco. He just bought me tacos until he had paid me back. Do you know how many chicken soft tacos you can buy with $20?
I don't even want to know.
It's like 23, I think.
Holy f***.
I'm pretty sure I ate 23 tacos. I just kept eating them, and he just kept buying more and more until I was done. Didn't even hurt that much. I wasn't even that full because I was drunk mostly.
This is the worst episode of our podcast. So
you want to know how like middle of the desert western it was around here? We used to take beers into the Del Taco in high school while we were eating.
What?
Yeah, it was a different time.
Dan.
Mm-hmm.
Dan.
Miller High Life, man.
Oh my God, Dan.
We should just remove all of this. We should just start over.
The champagne of beers.
Mm-hmm. It was really cheap back then. Still really cheap now, I think.
I don't think it is appreciated very much in terms of cost.
I bet Axel Foley would drink a Miller High Life.
Sure. Absolutely. Why not?
Isn't Miller in Detroit? No, wait. Who's in Detroit?
I don't know.
Hmm. Where is Miller? Colorado?
Several places, I think. Hmm. Because it's a large national chain.
Anyway,
yeah, so
did we cover all of the crucial fast food restaurants?
I mean, we didn't talk about Taco Bell.
Well, I know you're not a big fan of Taco Bell.
And we've covered
that extensively on the internet.
And we didn't talk about Chick-fil-A.
Well, I mean,
and does IHOP count? Where does IHOP fit in?
IHOP is it's a sore subject. I mean, that's really like a late night refuge for drunk people who've been out partying a lot. It's not just like I need some food or I'm going to die kind of place. It's more like let's continue the party and eat some hash browns.
Yeah, well, I mean, something about the way you were eating your food before thought that maybe this would be related.
Yeah, I mean, we used to go there and then they put in a Waffle House and then it was the end of that.
Gross.
Waffle House is great.
I've never been in one.
Well, then how do you know it's gross?
Because I just know.
You don't know.
I do know.
What, because I mentioned, where did I mention? On the internet, on Twitter, that
The roaches and stuff, and like how unclean it was?
They mop the floor during the day while they're working. And since it's like an open kitchen area there, you see the 2 inches of water in the kitchen that they're all standing in that he's mopping.
See, Dan, you're not supporting your case here.
Waffle House food is delicious. Just don't look around.
Oh, God.
I'm a big fan of the All-Star. Was it All-Star breakfast? You get like one of everything. It's great. Grits, waffles, bacon, eggs.
So, in Beverly Hills, he's at the police station, which is actually the city hall. And
it's a really nice looking building.
It's a very nice looking building, but the police station is actually in the back of that, and it is ugly. It is an 80s monstrosity, and it is an eyesore. But they use the front of that, and you can see part of the 76 gas station with the funky swoopy roof on the corner of Crescent over there on the corner, and so they agree that he's going to go to the city limits, which is hilarious because you could walk to the city limits. Like, they're Beverly Hills, teeny tiny, and they're going to take him out of there.
Apparently, there are a lot of seedy bars on the borders of Beverly Hills and Hollywood.
It was a different time, but they agree to do this, and Axel talks Rosewood into taking him to go by and do this one last thing. And gets into the warehouse thing, and they catch the guys, and, you know,
they actually find the drugs in the coffee grounds.
Yeah. And Jenny's in trouble because of the things and the stuff. And there's this whole thing about how she's going to be taken away to be tortured and killed later, but he's going to be killed there because Goldfinger. And he's not killed there because Rosewood's like, oh geez, oh geez, oh geez, and then he finally goes in and shoots the one guy, and then
I wish I could have ringtones on my phone because I just want you saying oh geez 3 times as my ringtone.
Okay.
Oh geez, I got a text. Oh geez.
Well, they bust that up, and then they know that they need to go chase after Maitland, So Rosewood calls it in when they're going to go drive off, and Rose is very conflicted about this, but they tell Taggart, and Taggart's like, I'm very conflicted about this, and he's like, don't tell anybody, but go check on this thing, and then he goes off to go chase after Rosewood, and the weird thing about the interaction is, of course, nobody mentions that someone was shot and bleeding, because why would you? And so they go to the mansion, and it's actually in the Pacific Palisades, and then Taggart shows up, and he's all like, what are we going to do? And he explains the situation. It's like, okay, well, he gets his shotgun out, and then they're going to go in, and again, not really say anything, because nobody wants to get in trouble at this point, for some reason, because that'll matter. And they are going to...
They'll be dead by the time they call the cops, so they got to go in on their own.
Yeah, except it's radio. So they go in... And they chase after people who have machine guns and stuff, and they just, like, blow up a lot of things. And bullets don't seem to work
really
very well.
A really extended comedy montage where they're, like, trying to get up over a wall, even though they're already inside the property. And they're like, give me a boost, and whoops, I landed on your shoulders, and we fell over, and now I'll give you a boost, and I'm hanging here, and push me up over by my butt and stuff.
Yeah, it was like they were just like, hey, remember Laurel and Hardy? Let's do one of those.
For like 4 or 5 minutes.
Yeah, it's really weird. And Victor sees all this on closed circuit TV on little tiny CRTs he has, and he's like, keep an eye on him. And they go off after stuff, and they're shooting and things, and Ronnie Cox figures out what's going on, and he has all of his cops go over from the north end, just the north end, leave the south end guys where they are, and that's hilarious, because again, Beverly Hills is not that big. And so they go to...
You've got your north of Wilshire crew, and you got your south of Wilshire crew.
Yeah, and that's probably a grand total of 30 cops on duty, maybe.
You could throw a football from one side to the other, couldn't you?
Yeah, basically. I mean, it's... The city is an actual city with utilities and cops and fire department and everything.
Don't forget area codes.
Yes, but it is very small. It is laughably, comically small. And it is embedded inside of Los Angeles as a city. So it is hilarious to describe threatening to take someone to the city limits, or that there are north end and south end cops or any of that. But anyway, they go to the premises, they bust up the whole thing, there's a lot of shooting out stuff that happens, and the whipped cream guy bites the dust, and Victor shoots Axel in the arm, and he's got Jenny, but then Ronnie Cox is there, and Ronnie Cox shoots him up with Axel, so he's part of the thing, and then when the chief shows up and asks for an explanation, Ronnie Cox lies instead of Eddie Murphy lying, and he spins a tale about how this all worked out in a certain way that won't get anyone in trouble. And that's illegal. But,
you know, they were undercover cops the whole time.
Yeah, exactly. They were really in collaboration with the Detroit Police Department the entire time, including earlier when he was almost in trouble.
No, not they weren't in collaboration with Detroit. That was the interdisciplinary task force in the other movie. No, Jenny reported that she found drugs in the warehouse, so they were following up on it, but Axel just happened to be a bystander because he was in the car, because remember, we were supposed to get him out of town and stuff, so
and then
he was here, and then he just jumped in to help out.
He just observed. And so they go through the...
He observed and got shot in the arm.
Yeah. So they go through this process, and the chief's like, do you believe that, Taggart? What really happened? And then Taggart has this really long pause that no one will believe, and then he says, yes, that's exactly what happened. Exactly as the lieutenant said.
I don't know who to trust here. That report better be on my desk tomorrow. I was like, geez, man. Gotta write that whole report tonight.
And so they have Axel checking out of the hotel, and the Beverly Hills Police Department is going to take care of his bill, which is very generous. And they
he also puts two hotel robes on the bill for them to give to Taggart and Rosewood, and Taggart tells him to keep it. He's like, no, I already stole three of them, so this one's yours too.
Yeah, you know, the monograms. They are going to head on out of there at the end of the film, but they're going to stop by at a bar for a drink, and, you know, oh, we're on duty, we can't have anything. And it's like, one beer is not going to kill you. So, ta-da.
So, yeah, they're starting to get on the side. They're becoming friends and pals and starting to do things his way, too. I forgot that it ended like that. I swear the TV edit doesn't end like that, where it's just, like, sticking his head out the car window and gives a thumbs up and smile, and then credits! Stir It Up for the second time. they play these songs in this movie repeatedly. The Heat Is On plays what, twice? Stir It Up plays two or three times. The Axl theme song plays probably 700 times. They're like, we paid Harold Faltermeyer like a lot of money for this song. We're going to get our money worth out of it. That is one song that I managed to install as a ringtone on my phone. It gets really old really fast, so I don't actually use it, but it's on there, I think.
Oh. That's good. Back from when you used to be able to install ringtones.
Yeah.
Yeah. Those were the days.
Yeah. Actually, it's not on there anymore. I think I probably just have it as a song in iTunes. It's a good song.
Those were the days, my friend. Days that will never end.
It was a good movie. It's a good, like, small, low-budget movie with some comedy and some antics and some improv and Eddie Murphy, and before he turned into the Eddie Murphy monstrosity that he is now.
Yeah, he didn't sing. And he...
was not a donkey.
Yeah, and he didn't talk to animals, and he wasn't in some sort of a suit. So it was fine.
He cursed. He used bad words, too, which you would never do if you had kids.
Yes, very bad words.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
It's a good movie.
Yeah.
It's a classic movie.
Yeah.
A lot of great lines.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone should go watch this movie again. It's on Netflix.
Yeah, it's free.
Yeah. The second one's on there, too.
Yeah.
We're going to do that next week.
Let's do that next week.
Oh, dear. Yeah, they're working on a Beverly Hills Cop 4, apparently.
I like how you said Eddie Murphy 4. Like, they've run through enough iterations of him.
Yeah. Oh, look at that. Exactly hour 40 minutes. Beverly Hills Cop 2.
Yeah.
And same, nothing if not consistent.
Same runtime.
I bet Beverly Hills Cop 3 is way longer.
I wouldn't know.
Let's see. Eddie Murphy. Beverly Hills Cop 3. Oh, 4 minutes longer.
Oh. Well, I'm sure it's all added bonus material that is delightful.
Sure, but, the director's cut.
Ta-da!
And that's the Ricky Henderson bit.
What?
Oh, it's a reference to a David Cross stand-up thing, sorry.
Oh.
I don't know where that came from.
Okay. Do you want to wrap this up?
I suppose we could.
Yeah.
Goodbye.
Adios!
It's a good thing to say before you, like, blow somebody away in an action movie.